This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Welcome, Talk Catholic, the website.com, your host, Tim Kilcoyne. No agendas here, just the straight and narrow, through Mary to Jesus, the Catholic faith proclaimed and preserved. Hope to see you here every week. Talk Catholic with Tim Kilcoyne in the waning days of summer, but they continue, and because of that, I think I'll continue with Fairways to Faith, full swing and short game for your spiritual journey. And we'll get back to Saint of the Month next month. We'll also hear a little bit more from our book review and the Duke of Austria on building a wholesome family in a broken world. Well, anyway, Father Michael Linder from the book Golf and the Spiritual Life has been relaying a very heavy theme at the beginning of this book, having mostly to do with the need for instruction and whether we're docile and open to it. And he talks about the grip, and that's where I start in my Fairways to Faith program. I parallel two instruction videos that I did years ago called Seven Steps to Par, Full Swing and Short Game. And indeed, we start with the grip, how to hold on. And I mentioned in a previous show that, generally speaking, you have three different grips to choose from, an interlock grip, an overlap grip, and a 10-finger baseball grip. But being radio, I can't show you very specifically the differences. But more importantly, and I just gave a lesson the other day to a father and son team, and I started out the lesson package with exactly the importance of rhythm and the grip. Those two things are so important to just kind of getting it right
without thinking too many mechanical thoughts right away.
Father Michael Linder was talking about his death approach and death grip on the club, that he's so doggedly determined to seek perfection that he does everything in overdrive. And he went to get a lesson, and the instructor just told him, you know, you got to lighten up about tenfold or more. And he just couldn't believe it. And this is what I always start out a student in doing, is grabbing onto the club. And I actually go up and shake their hand first, like a fish. I say, don't shake mine, let me shake your hand. And I shake it so sheepishly, just to get them the sense that that is indeed grip pressure. As Sam Snead once said, it's like holding a bird in your hand. You don't want it to fly away, but you don't want to crush it. Or and preferably, instead of a bird, grab an egg out of your refrigerator and then don't get the egg on you. So light grip pressure is really important in the golf swing, and tempo goes with it. In other words, if you have light grip pressure, you can feel the club head,
which is
a very positive feature of a good golf swing. You see some of the greats, they make it look like they're sleepy. Fred Couples comes to mind in my generation especially, and Ernie Els. But many of these, and the gals are really good at tempo. I used to be a coach of UC Santa Barbara women's golf, and we played Division I top-notch golf nationwide, held some big-time intercollegiate tournaments. And boy, if there was one constant common denominator amongst all of them, they had this beautiful tick-tocking fluid tempo. Nothing looked rushed or wicked. They weren't giving it what I call the gorilla. And Father Michael Linder is referring to himself in that kind of way, that he does everything with the gorilla approach. And that's got to go. We got to get sleepy, kind of prayerful. We got to chill. Okay, you can see where I'm going. And anyway, relative to tempo, it's tick-tock. Or I sometimes give the example of, say, the letter E. When you swing the club up to the top of your swing, the letter E out loud, and then say the letter Z at the bottom of the arc where you hit the ball and try to just say the two letters very, very slowly. E-Z, not easy. Okay? All right. This is the gracefulness of the golf swing. We're not talking heavy-duty mechanics just yet. We're trying to get a sense of the club head's feel and a nice tick-tocking rhythm. And if I never taught another mechanic beyond that, I guarantee you they would hit the ball better every time. Indeed, they will. Now, what does this correlate to in the spiritual life? Well, maybe you can't be an engineer and a scientist all the time, or a mathematician, you know, just give me the step by step by step and I'll get this down. Just a matter of going through the steps. Not necessarily. And that's the beauty of this game, is that there are multiple ways of swinging a golf club and hitting it very well. But you can't do any of them hard and with a kind of ferocious tenacity. So I think it correlates to some degree in the spiritual life to our different strokes for different folks, but all roads can lead to Rome if we stay faithful and stay in God's grace. We have many different rhythms of our prayer life, for instance. Your prayer life isn't my prayer life. And you kind of know when you need to do things, and so do I. There's a certain regimen to our prayer, hopefully. You know, you want to stick to it and not get lax. But there's also a spontaneity to your prayer life where you kind of know it's time for me to go pray. It's time for me to talk to Jesus.
In the way I talk to Jesus.
And that could come at any time during the day. You know, preferably we at least pray three times a day, morning, noon, and evening, but in between, for sure. But I'm not going to tell you how to pray. I can give you some rote prayers that could correlate to instruction manuals on the golf swing, but they may kick in and they may not, because as I say as a teaching pro, everybody kind of has a skeleton of their golf swing. There is your own body type and your physical fitness challenges. And your athleticism, your dexterity, what are you really capable of with eye-hand coordination, etc., etc. So I have to find your swing. I have to find your swing, which means I better be familiar with as many of them as possible. That's what makes a good teaching pro, that you've seen enough swings and you know which ones can work with individual body types and general makeups. Well, this is the same is true of a good spiritual director. And a spiritual director has seen and heard them all, stories galore, and he's seen patterns in the spiritual life. I just got together this morning with my favorite spiritual director, Father John, and I gave him some heavy-duty stuff to munch on a little bit, but he's already familiar with my spiritual life in general. And I also reached out to Jesse Romero to ask him a few questions. We've been interviewing Jesse in recent shows. You need a mentor. You gotta get a mentor. And they're probably going to blow you away with the paradoxes that you didn't think about. And today I'd like to take a look at his Father's chapter 4, Taking It Back, beginning of the golf swing. He's referring to, really, in this chapter, your general demeanor, your posture. Are you ready? Are you too intense? Are you thinking about your past rounds of golf? Or have you already reached the 18th hole before you started playing? He's talking about just the mindset, and he refers to the greatest golfer of all time in Jack Nicklaus, as he says, Jack Nicklaus arrived at the 12th tee at Augusta during one round of the 1995 Masters and promptly shanked the ball. The crowd around the tee numbered in the hundreds, if not thousands, and a television audience was probably in the millions. And when he hit the shot and the camera zoomed in on him, he looked a little sheepish. Who could blame him? The ever-present microphones picked up his words as he told the crowd that he'd hit a similar shot from this tee once before in the 1964 Masters. Then he walked to his ball and made a decent recovery from a difficult spot. I'm beginning to understand that this is one of the keys to my poor play. There are obviously many differences between me and Jack Nicklaus, but one of them is very clear. When Nicklaus stands over the ball, it's simply another golf shot. When I'm preparing to hit a shot, everything is on the line. because this is the case. He can play and then forget a poor shot while my many poor shots encircle me like many witnesses for the prosecution, and I am always guilty as charged. The witnesses line up to accuse me because I live in the past and in the future on a golf course, just as I tend to do in other areas of my life. I suffer when I fall short of perfection, and this leads me to worry that the future will be as poor as the past has proved itself to be. It's a sort of black and white approach to living that I have elevated to an art form, and it brings me nothing but misery, right or wrong, good or bad, on or off. I'm sure that some very fine players engage in worry about past and futures, I do, but they are good players in part because they have seized some of the opportunities to learn the valuable lessons which golf provides. Life is difficult, as everyone knows, and no one masters it. To expect perfection is to pave the way for disappointment. To allow mistakes to define us is to make life far more painful and difficult than it has to be. And to be consumed with the past is to set ourselves up to create a miserable future because so much is on the line. It's true that most people know these things, but few people act as if they actually believe them. Every day we encounter people who appear to be just fine, but who suffer in ways we are unaware of. Sometimes we are those people. The pain occasionally takes the form of a past that we cannot escape, or a future that scares the hell out of us. Often it's both at the same time, because worry about the future often springs from guilt about the past. No one is immune from this sort of pain. The only recourse at times is to insist that we experience worry about the past and the future because we care. Only insensitive jerks can forget the past or wait for the future to arrive on its own. Maybe this is why Fred Couples takes a lot of flack from people who don't know better. And he goes on to explain that Fred Couples was known to be steady Eddie, very calm, cool, and collected on the golf course, not showing any extremes of up and down in his demeanor. And he says, Couples is aware that once the ball has left the club face, it is quite literally out of his hands. What's done is done, and no amount of coaxing, crying, commanding, or cajoling will have any effect on a ball in flight. Perhaps the wind will catch an errant shot and help it out a bit, but it's just as likely to make a poor shot come out worse. In any event, the die has been cast, as Julius Caesar used to say. As I recall, people used to find fault with him too. Most amateurs are the exact opposite of Couples. They go into all sorts of contortions on the golf course, and though experience has taught them that none of their gyrations or verbal exhortations has ever had a positive effect on a shot, they continue to search for some new move that will bring them success. The truth is that the results are often out of their hands before they hit a shot, either because they are thinking about the last poor shot as they stand over the ball, or because they are counting on this shot to somehow erase a lifetime of poor ball striking. What I'm trying to say about Fred Couples is simply this. There is truly no point in worrying about a shot after you've hit it. That time has passed and it's not time to worry about the next shot. Golf is spiritual because it demands that a player remain in the present, at least if he wants to achieve any success at all. It turns out that a life well lived demands the same focus on the moment. No matter what we are doing, the present is a middle path which steers between the extremes of the past and the future. All of us tend to veer off toward one or the other of the extremes, and some of us are good at moving toward the past and the future simultaneously. I will never have Fred Couples' game, but I'm trying to adopt the attitude he seems to have when he's playing. He presents an image of one of the most important elements of the spiritual journey, the ability to stay in the present without being haunted by the past or consumed by the future. If you look at it from a certain angle, you can see that golf is a gift from God, for whom there is no past or future, just an eternally manageable present. It's a good place to live.
Well, I can add that what he's really talking about, in many respects, this business between focus on the past and the future, is how you handle pressure. What are those things that are gnawing at you in your life? And are they getting to the point of becoming debilitating? You're just not able to even act or make a decision, that kind of thing. And in the golf world, on a golf course, and amongst those you're playing golf with, too often we're thinking about how we played the course last week, or what hole we never do well on. Or who are the very people that we're playing with? Are you comfortable with them? Are you focused all on the people rather than the golf course? These are some of the things that get in your head. Gary Player used to talk about the 6-inch course between your ears. It's played in your head too often. And it's very similar in the spiritual life where you have some attacks
or crazy fantasies. The imagination run wild. Projections that you can't validate.
Warranted or not, right? And there's, in many respects, perhaps, there's not a darn thing you can do about them. It's part of what we call life's vicissitudes, the ups and downs, the things that happen. And you just have to keep going. Semper Fi is the Marine motto. Keep going to the next hole.
Focus,
as we will, after the break with the Duke of Austria.
Our book review, Building a Wholesome Family in a Broken World. This is WQPH Radio 89.3 FM.
Well, in our last session, and keep in mind, the key here is how do you build a wholesome family? It starts with who you choose to be your spouse. That's where it all starts. Adam and Eve gets it going. And you got to know which garden to be looking in. And he was talking so much about the fact that we're not islands, that we do come with a past. We come with fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters and friends.
Ethnic attachments. Don't forget that one.
We have a world that we bring with us. And so when you're dating, you can't get too caught up in just her or him, but all that they bring. And all too often, what gets in the way of being able to see that? Oh, I don't even want to say it. SEX, putting the cart before the horse, getting emotionally all caught up in a premature world that will cloud your vision of the right spouse for you. Yes, sirree, I just said it, and it's true to the max. So, and I gave my experience of a particular gal, but it was really most of my girlfriends all through the years, because had one of them been a traditional Roman Catholic, I might have been married by now, but that was not the case. They were just about everything but. So it certainly was an educational smorgasbord, but I learned that the world that they came with was not my world. They were lovely. We were in love many times over. But, you know, you can't just look at them, right, for the rest of your life. You got to talk. And you got to talk about meaningful things, not just the domestic stuff, all right? People can hide behind the domestic commonalities or common denominators. You like cooking together. Great.
It won't help you when you're 14-year-old daughter brings Joe Bad Boy home.
You got to
go deep. It's not just a baseball phrase.
And be able to talk about values. That's right.
The meaningful stuff.
And if you can't go there, then check out.
And make your exit ASAP. And I will add one piece of practical advice. You can pretty much get to know somebody in 3 months. That's about it. You don't have to go much further than that, provided you keep it chaste. And you ask the right questions early on.
Like I did. And don't worry, God will take care of you as he did me, for sure. He's protected me every step of the way. Would I rather be settled down with 8 kids? Yeah, I'd give anything for that. But wasn't God's will. And I probably learned the hard way by dating too much. Whatever you do, make sure you do date. And don't just grab on to the first one that looks at you. That can be a problem, too. The Duke says, what if you don't find a spouse? I know of many young men and women who would love to find a good spouse, but have only had bad experiences. Some have given up looking. This book has been written partly for you. Never lose hope. Pray, pray, pray. And ask God to show you the path to your future spouse. And did I mention becoming a Catholic makes things easier? Be sober and strategic. It is possible that your future devout, chaste, family-loving, stunning spouse is living just across the street and will one day ring your doorbell to borrow some flour. But don't count on it. This is an unwholesome world. You may have to cast your net a little wider. There are plenty of good, devout people who are looking for a husband or wife, and not a few of them are easy on the eye. How did the Habsburgs find their spouses? They knew where to look. They married only other Catholics
and ideally from other courts in Europe where they could be sure that the future spouses had the same principles, the same devotions, and the same basic ideas about family. When you're hunting buffalo, you go to a watering hole, not the woods. When you're looking for a devout Catholic spouse, you probably shouldn't begin in a bar. Devout Catholics are found, first of all, congregating around parishes and churches. Now, if your parish is populated primarily by elderly, well-meaning ladies, consider scouting out other parishes in your town or even further away. Monasteries, retreats, local or national pilgrimages, and youth encounters bring together droves of devout Catholics. But I would add, don't rule out political summit meetings amongst more conservative meaning people. Because unfortunately in our Catholic Church these days, there's a strand of liberalism that runs throughout. And too often you'll run into them too on those retreats that he's talking about. You might find that you have way more in common with a Catholic from the political organization CPAC that actually is run by Matt Schlapp and his wife Mercedes, two very good Catholics. So don't rule out those kind of political get-togethers. Or as the Duke of Austria says, visit your cousin in Iowa because she told you they're very nice, good young men in her parish. Or your aunt in California. Know that there are many others who are in this game and that your opportunities in these milieus may be better than those at home. Don't overlook Catholic dating sites. That may sound even less romantic than hunting, but there are hundreds of happy marriages that have come about because people exchanged parameters online and found a partner for life. I know one couple who found each other on different continents who are now happily married with several children. Think about it. Many Habsburg princes and princesses over the centuries found their spouses in a way not so different from meeting someone through a modern dating site. They saw a picture, prayed it was lifelike and not a Photoshop enhanced, wrote each other courteous letters, and then got married. Don't lose hope. Your spouse may be waiting for you on another continent. Which means travel. Make sure you do a little traveling, especially when you're young. I remember meeting a gal out in Ireland in 88, I believe. Carolyn. And I should have married her right on the spot when she said to me one night, Mr. Kilcoyne, we're not like the American girls, you know. We wear dresses over here. Oh, did I miss that boat or what? And she wrote one letter after another to me for probably over a year. I didn't pick up the cue. I just kind of wrote it off like, this ain't never going to happen. She's on the other side of the ocean. Oh, boy. Keep your mind open. I have a friend who has two sons who just recently got married to gals, and they met them online. One was in Wisconsin, I believe the other in Georgia. The one good thing about this kind of long-distance dating is that you got to ask the right questions for sure, or you won't have any conversation. So it is a venue that allows you to ask some meaningful questions.
Finally,
the Duke says,
you might consider a pilgrimage to a sanctuary or begin a novena to a humble giant of the faith. Just never forget to pray.
I know my mom prayed for her spouse, and she lured the greatest guy in the world, John Michael Kilcoyne, the most handsome stud as well, from Clinton, Mass. And it was a mutual find from that moment onward. You got to pray and believe.
And now the Duke turns to the great plunge, he calls it. You've found each other. You've spent time together. You've mapped out the interior landscape of your soulmate. You've also listened to the voice of your heart. You've examined my list and checked it twice. And you haven't let your judgment be clouded by too much emotional or physical interference. So when is the right moment to jump in and get engaged? Well, we live in a time when the most difficult thing seems to be making any commitment. Here are a few reasons why. First, they are afraid to give up their freedom, even when this fabled freedom, the main idol of our day, is the source of so much modern unhappiness. Second, even when nearly all the boxes are checked, they believe that they may still find a better deal. We live in a consumerist perfectionist society in which dating apps and swiping apps create such an illusion of options that it seems foolish to settle for only one. And third, because they expect complete fulfillment in another person, only a dream prince or a fantasy princess who caters to their every wish will do. This 19th century idea of romantic love permeates the pages of romance novels. But love is not a steamy feeling. It is an act of giving and a commitment of self. We have been living in a dictatorship of feelings for the last 200 years, but it has become especially tyrannical in the last 20. In fact, we have been told so often throughout our lives that everything should be governed by our feelings that we forget about our minds. I want to make this point very clear. I want you to write this down. Love, like faith, is ultimately a decision.
Maybe that's why in looking at some of the old movies, you don't see long courtships. Can't do this till I get my degree. We need to stock up on some more cash. No, they just got married and willed to love, as we do right here every week at WQPH Radio, 89.3 FM. Summer ain't over yet. God bless.
Let your light shine. That is what it's all about here at WQPH Radio, 89.3 FM. But we need to hear your story. You want your voice to be his voice. That is making the faith known to others. Please, my number is 877-625-3727. Tim Kilcoyne, talkcatholic.com.
St. Mother Teresa told us, your ministry is your work right where you are. Grab on to this microphone. God bless.